All right. Welcome to this extra special party class, the last day of this module. And we're actually going to have a lot of fun tonight. So thank you all, the ones who came early, you know, especially you all. You were here last week, right? Were you know? This is your first time coming? Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you get a super extra special bonus. We will definitely be reviewing some of the things tonight, but the last night we spent extra time doing some practice on the things that we've been studying for the last 4 or 5 weeks. So if you get restless, I don't blame you. You feel free to move around or leave or whatever. We're going to spend a little bit of extra time this, because I think at 7 some other people may show up who either forgot or were scared off by extra work. Hey, Lori. Hey, everybody. Again, thank you all for coming here early. I know it's a lot on a Monday. So we're going to spend a little extra time setting our intention. I'm going to walk us through something, and then we are going to go walk around the stupa a few times. And we'll talk about the mindset for that as well. And then we're going to come back and we'll do some extra things around Tonglen that we had talked about last week. We'll go into that in a little more detail, as well as a test. Open book, group work, group huddle for the test so that you have a souvenir to take home. You don't have to worry about that. You can watch everybody else's answers. Yeah, actually, because it would be a review of a lot of the things that we've been studying. Okay, so the first thing is, you know, in setting your intention, just check your posture. Remember, if you're sitting in a chair, feet flat on the floor, most important thing is that your spine is straight. And, you know, we try to check our motivation as often as we can throughout the day, because our intention, our motivation, is what launches our actions in the direction, the highest direction. We can have the same actions, but it's the intention that really counts. So somebody can have the same actions as the person sitting next to them, but only they know what's going on in their minds. And so setting the intention is really especially important before you do some kind of practice. So just take a few deep breaths and try to exhale all the tension from Monday, all the thoughts, all the whatever is on your mind, any discomfort. Try to inhale focus, relaxed focus, and exhale anything that you need to let go of. And then as we begin to put our attention on our motivation, feel from the depths of your heart your desire for happiness, your longing for happiness, your wish to be free from suffering, your wish to be free from the constant disturbances of the body and of the mind that you experience. Just try to generate that wish. And now think of others, those you know, those whom you work with, those you read or hear about in the news, those all around the world. And think of animal beings. Spirit beings. Beings trapped in hellish existences. People who are tormented by the sufferings of fame, of money, the sufferings of being beautiful, holding on to that beauty, suffering when it fades. Those who are suffering the pain of separating from those things, fame, money, beauty. recognize that all living beings, just like you, want happiness. They don't want to suffer. They also share that strong desire that you generated for freedom from suffering. And how wonderful it would be if all beings were to have happiness and the causes of happiness. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were to be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. How wonderful it would be if all beings were inseparable from the happiness that is beyond suffering. How wonderful it would be if all beings were able to abide in a state of perfect, blissful equanimity, free from attachment, free from aversion, just centered in a blissful state of equanimity. How wonderful it would be if I am able to cause all sentient beings to abide in this way. May I myself abide in this way. Think how wonderful it is that you are trying to engage in a spiritual path. We have met perfect teachings that are capable of bringing us to the state of enlightenment. Of course, we constantly meet obstacles, problems, difficulties, both inside our mind and outside. This is my chance to transform my problems into the path of enlightenment. In order to attain enlightenment as quickly as possible and not be discouraged by problems, I will do this practice, engage in these discussions on transforming problems into happiness for the benefit of myself and all others. Take one problem in your life right now that you'd like to use in this meditation. Something that is causing your mind to be disturbed. Could be a difficult relationship, something at work, something at home, health issues, lack of energy, obstacles that make you feel nothing goes smoothly. Be specific for yourself. If you're having trouble picking, then allow the variety of them to present themselves to you and feel which one is the strongest right now. Feel how your mind wants to push it away, to get it out of your life, how it creates discomfortness of being unhappy or discontented. So that's the one you're going to use right now. There's lots of different ways to approach a problem, to transform it into the path. Some of these may resonate and some may not. Just pick which works for you. One way is, what if thinking, what if this problem is a test? My teacher, my practice, my inner teacher is testing my patience, testing my resolve to persevere. My teacher, my inner teacher, my practice is testing my ability to have compassion. What if this problem in reality is a manifestation of something that will allow me to purify that obstacle forever? What if this is really a gift? Another way to think about it is using renunciation, thinking as long as I am in samsara, as long as I am under the influence of karma and delusions, what do I expect? Samsara means having problems. Problems arise. Do I think that there will be no problems? Why don't I use this problem to increase my desire to be liberated from samsara? Do I think there will be happiness in samsara? Complete happiness? This problem allows me to see the fault of that thinking. Without this problem, I might be deluded into thinking that there is complete happiness in samsara. I might miss the opportunity to attain liberation. This problem allows me to remember my shortcomings, my inability to create constant happiness in this state. My pride is being reduced, and I am generating a true mind of renunciation. And the final way is using bodhicitta, reminding ourselves, I am not the only one experiencing this problem. There are countless beings that are experiencing the same type of problem right now. They are also feeling frustration, pain, depression, physical discomfort right now. Not only that, but I have Dharma. I understand more about suffering and about the path to freedom from suffering. I have people who are helping me, and I am making effort. The majority of other beings have no idea. They don't have this support and help that I do have. They suffer and suffer and do not understand. There are many beings who would trade places with me for an instant, in an instant, for an entire lifetime. as we try to get a little space around this problem, letting it float a little bit instead of clenching around the problem. Letting it float as if it were a flower opening in an ocean, on top of the ocean. There's lots of space. We generate some confidence in our ability to maintain our equilibrium around this problem. We understand the potential benefits this problem can present. And then with heartfelt determination and gratitude, we take refuge. Wherever you take refuge, if you're Buddhist, then you take refuge in the Three Jewels. But everybody takes refuge somewhere, in something. So for right now, generate a strong refuge, strong connection to where you take refuge. Okay, and in a minute we're going to go outside and walk around the stupa at least 3 times. And what you may have done walking around the stupa many, many times. So whatever works, whatever you hold in your mind. But remembering that we are walking around the symbol of a pure enlightened mind. We're walking under prayer flags, which a stupa filled with holy objects, texts. We're using our body, speech, and mind to engage in this action with each other. So we've created the cause to do this because of what we've done together in the past. At some point in the future, you can imagine what we will be doing in future lifetimes. But just be aware of yourself, your freedoms, your potential, everything that you're carrying in this moment of the river of you that you're walking around this stupa. To purify the obstacles between you and complete enlightenment, between you and what that stupa holds. You're purifying any obstacles. You're drawing yourself closer and closer to your future Buddha. You don't have to even think of something outside of yourself. It's something inside of yourself that you are creating the causes to become as every time you walk around that stupa. And if you have something in particular some particular difficulty, then keep that in mind as you walk around and see if you can dissolve some of the issues around it a little bit. Okay, so. definitely go do that now. Any questions about the stupa before we go? Okay, this should be all. I like to do practices that involve, you know, all three gates, body, speech, and mind. That's really helpful. Donna, you just missed it. We were dancing around the stupa.
Oh, yes. I missed all the fun.
I know, you miss all the fun.
I want to interrupt really quickly.
Sure.
For a quick announcement.
Oh, yeah, remind me.
So one of the principles that's really important in Buddhism is karma. And we may not have control over the karma that we're experiencing in this lifetime, but we do have some control over the karma we experience in the future by choosing to do things that will create the causes for things that we wish to have happen. And at Kadampa Center, one thing we always wish to have happen is to have the teachings continue as much as possible. And with that in mind, because we really appreciate everybody who teaches here, our lay people as well as our Sangha, we have a little offering in thanks to Steve for teaching this class. May she continue with us for many, many, many more classes.
It's always very embarrassing. Thank you so much. Thank you all. Okay.
I really like it when you get married.
Yeah.
It's really good. It really is.
It's really helpful to us. Very. Thank you, Donna. I like your t-shirt. It says, "Wowie, wow," on the back.
Wow, wow, wow.
Wow, wow, wow.
We also have a card on behalf of the students, which we always give ourselves to the end of class to finish, since most of us don't get here early enough to sign it. We're all super thankful.
Well,
because we're all here.
We're all
thankful
here.
For all of us.
Yes.
And because we're all here and we've put some effort in, something really important that's coming up is October 8th, which is the celebration for everyone who's been doing Discovering Buddhism in this cycle. It started way back in September of 2016. We have one more module after this. But anybody, you know, if you see people that have been coming to these modules on a different day or around or whatever, please say, hey, I'm going to see you on October 8th, right? And I know of the people that are in here, because you guys are all the super committed ones. You're here on the practice day. We've been here the whole time. Please do come and just celebrate any effort you've made and continue to make effort together in the future. So after the Tantra module, we'll have a celebration. And then the new cycle starts again in January. So we have November and December off, but the calendar is looking kind of empty in November and December. So Donna has taken the request of people that wanted discussion, and we have decided to create something. It's not on the calendar yet, but like in November, we'll take a break for Thanksgiving, and then beginning of December, instead of having a new module, we'll just have like discussion about these DB topics. We might ask some special guests to attend, but not have to lead anything, but maybe just be part of a discussion, because I think a lot of our teachers have been wanting to, you know, participate like that as well. So we'll be inviting some special guests and just having some discussion a lot about how we're using these topics in our lives and things like that. It'll be structured. And for everybody who's keeping track of what they're doing, there's a completion card there in the back of the room. As Steve always says, write it down. You never know. And really, just the teacher you're with and everything that you've done for this module, it's important just go ahead and keep track of it. Even if you have more to do later, write it down. That's all.
And if any of you who are coming to those discussions, like if you want to start doing, like, say, a mantra collection of 100,000 mantras or prostrations or whatever is some of the requirements on the DB certificate, the more complicated DB certificate, or any practice like that, I'm happy to come and talk about it, you know, or to help with any of those. Say you want to do half an hour of some mantras or prostration or something like that, I'm happy to help come and work on that. I remember when Geshe-la wanted us to memorize this really, 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 really long text. Mm-hmm. And so what we would do is we would all just go off into the corners with like a partner and we would practice memorizing these things because it jump-started it on your own. It's really hard to do everything all the time on your own. So we'd spend a couple hours just going over things with each other here. So like that, I'm happy to do that. It's hard to keep that motivation going all the time on your own.
Okay. So it sounds like if we have one of our discussion nights on Module 14, the elusive Module 14, and just practices we might start at any time
right.
that we know our special guests that we might invite.
Right. Or like say you would like to learn the Vajrasattva mantra. I can't teach that to you, but, you know, you could ask Geshe-la to teach that mantra, and then we can practice memorizing it. We can practice saying it. This is what happened when Geshe-la first came to the center. So I joined the center before he was here, right before he came. And when he came, it was just like, whoosh, all this energy came in, and a lot of people came. And he was then, it was just a handful of us sitting around in the basement. And so he would teach us, like, the Vajrasattva mantra. He would give malas out, and we would practice right then with him, saying these mantras and learning these mantras. And so a lot of us got that kind of encouragement, that kind of jump start, which made a huge difference. We can still ask him to do that. I mean, that's the thing. We have this incredible resource. So if there's something, you can either ask me, how do we ask him? How do we ask him as a group? How do you ask him individually? But it's a real boost when you have that person helping. And he is not going to be the one to say, hey, I think you all need to learn this now. It really has to come from us saying, can you teach me that mantra? What's it like to say that mantra? He's not going to say, oh, okay, I'm going to teach this to you. Now you need to say it 3 million times. If you ask him, how many times should I say? Be careful what you ask for. But if you say, I want to learn this mantra, and he's happy to give you that initiation into that mantra, help you learn how to say it, help you with visualizations around it. So I've been doing the 35 Buddha practice for a long time, and then I think he saw how dedicated I was to it, and then he told me some mantras that went with it, told me some other visualizations that went with it. So it just kept growing as I developed in that practice. So that's my pitch. So now for a little fun. Sorry to do this to y'all, but it's really beyond good. This is a little souvenir. Some people call it a test, but I don't grade it. You all do it together in a group. You can use your books, use your notes, whatever. You're going to write these things down, and then you can take it home. And you will have it when you refer. I still have tons of tests that Geshe-la had us do in the very beginning, and he graded them. We got grades on them and comments with red pens. I got a 7.5 out of 10 on something. I was like, oh, so that's not happening here.
7.5.
Yeah, I got a 7. Yeah, I got half wrong, half right on one. So, but then you can go back and look at them. So what I'd like you to do is get into, and if you want to do it completely on your own, that's fine. But I think a lot of people it'll help if you sit together, because I don't think everybody memorized those first two verses, for example, so it doesn't matter. But if you have, you know, then you can hear somebody, you can hear, say if Erin's memorized those, then the people in her group will get to hear her say it out loud and see if she did it correctly, like that. Okay? So find a couple of other people to sit with and talk over these tests that shouldn't take too long. And then we'll come back as a group and talk about it. And then we'll have fun. Then we'll watch a little video. We'll do a fun meditation. Brian, you're not taking the test?
No.
The AV guy never has to take tests. That's how I like that. Hey, you guys can come and watch them take the test. You can be proctors. You can make sure they're... And these are just things we've been discussing this last several weeks. Okay. Okay, now everybody can hear me. Now there's no excuse, guys. Oh, it sounds like everybody aced this test.
She got me my favorite.
she, She's got to do laps today. Laps around the stupa. All right, so how'd that go?
Really good.
Good. I want to pass out something that will help with that first, with the 8 verses, because we didn't really have time to go through it. Just take some and pass back, please. We didn't really have time to go through all of the verses. Okay, you can just put the extras back there, because I made a lot. I was expecting like a whole crowd of people today. So, how many people have memorized at least those first 2 verses? Aaron, I know you have. All right, that's awesome. You can go all the way and do 8. All right, you did? You know, it's a pretty, it makes sense. It's in English. It's not like you're memorizing something in another language. And then if you refresh it like once a week, I used to like jog. So in the beginning of my jog, I would say that, you know. And then, you know, then you can have it at the tip of your tongue when you need it. Geshe was always talking about the importance of memorizing things, because then you don't have to rely on a text. You have it right there in your brain. So these 8 that I gave out to you are what the 8 verses are touching upon. And I know we all have different translations of it. So anyway, take a look and make sure that makes sense. So we talked about the first 2. And they get more complicated, like everything. Oh, gosh. All right. So remember last week we were talking about countering pride with humility? So there's number 2 there. Yep. And as you go down the list, here we go. The third one is checking the mind for delusions and averting them when they arise. And that's the third verse. You know, in every action I will watch my mind. And the moment destructive emotions arise, I will confront them strongly and avert them, since they will hurt both me and others. The fourth one is cherishing those of bad character and great misfortune. Like I said, these get harder and harder. And as Don Hendrick had said, this is like, you know, postgraduate work to do some of these. But it's really important to know what they're talking about and to be able to strive towards them. The fifth one, accepting defeat and giving up the victory to others. And even if we're making the wish to do that, you know, so the fifth verse in the 8 verses is, whenever someone out of envy does me wrong by attacking or belittling me, I will take defeat upon myself and give the victory to others. The sixth one, cherishing even those who repay our care and love with great harm. Really difficult. Seventh one, in short, practice taking and giving directly and indirectly at all times. And the eighth one is really much more about emptiness. It joins our practice with renunciation and emptiness. All right, so, you know, hang on to that. It'll help you as you continue to study the 8 verses. And you know, yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Let me give you a text.
In reading some of this stuff, actually some materials that Jack had given me, there's an excerpt from this Ken Rinpoche Geshe Tashi Sering.
Uh-huh.
That when we say enemy or this wicked, horrible person that makes me angry, it's not that the person makes you angry, you make yourself angry, you become angry because you don't have patience.
Right. Yeah.
I'm having trouble with that to a large degree, understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they make you angry. And we had a discussion group the other night, and for a lot of these things, I got to tell you, I had a problem.
Yeah, with a lot of these?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
But when we, in a discussion group we came up with, and again, I thank Jack for this, when we started looking at it from the first one of seeing all sentient beings as being precious jewels, it came down for me to be able to hang with this. I got to separate the actions, what's happening, from the person
right.
that I see it being generated from.
Right.
Then I can look at a picture of a young Hitler and mm-hmm. see a child.
Right.
But that's, I don't know if that's the right path for mm-hmm. for me right now. That's the only way I can really
right
really embrace these, is separating the actions
right
you know
right from, yeah because we're not saying the actions being. Aren't harmful, absolutely, and you know I think starting with the first one
yeah
and really, I mean, how many of us have really got the first one down? So the other one's a lot, you know, like I said, is postgraduate work. The thing I think that helps, because the first one is infused through all of them. So if we understand our interconnectedness to other beings, what we have in common, so that nobody, even a Hitler, is not 100% bad all the time in all places. But the other thing that I've heard His Holiness talk about Hitler is like, look how much damage one person can do from their negative mind.
Yeah. You know?
One person's negative mind can cause so much damage, so much suffering. That's what we have to keep our minds in check and say, wherever I go, with whomever I go, I watch myself in all actions. So I think keeping ourselves in check to know, okay, and nobody's 100%. Mm-hmm. It's true that the suffering I'm having is coming from my mind, but I'm being provoked by, say somebody's trying to kill me, this, yes, okay, if I was a completely enlightened being, I would see this in a different way. But you know, there's something going on here that I need to do to protect myself, because my life is valuable, you know. I thank you for bringing it up, because this is kind of infused throughout this whole thing we're talking about, and actually what I want to talk about when we start talking about the eight worldly dharmas. It's the same. It's because it's same thing. It's the same question, and maybe it'll help me for me to talk about that a little bit right now. Because I was going over, I was reading something. Maybe it was by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who was saying that in eight worldly dharmas, one way to think about it is, of course, we all want something good. Okay, so we all want to be praised. That's a very nice feeling to have. But if we could also train our mind into seeing that the negative sides of the eight worldly dharma, the blame, that's part of this realm. All the things of the negative side are just part of, and so we can start to train ourselves when we see it come towards us is, of course, why wouldn't I expect this to happen, to be blamed or to lose what I like or all these things. When the good thing arises, the praise, to know that this is actually the dangerous one. Because if I believe this praise and get attached to this praise, then I start to create all kind of problems for myself and others because I don't want to lose this praise. I start to develop this pride, which is going to cause all these problems. If I'm criticized, however, if somebody blames me for something, I can go, okay, here's a chance to work on my mind about this. As long as it's small enough, and bite sizes, remember? So Hitler is like, you know, it's like a huge, at least we're not in it right now, so we can look at it from a distance and go, oh, wow. And how amazing it is that, I remember reading this story about this one man in a concentration camp, and one day, you know, here he is in a concentration camp, he fell to his knees in prayer, and one of his fellow captives said, what in the world are you doing? And he said, I'm just so happy I don't have the mind of a Nazi. It just hit him. How incredible this was that he didn't have that in mind and he wasn't in that position. Mm-hmm. So there's ways that we can do that on a much smaller scale every day. And I think enemy is such a strong word. You know, it's the people who are the way we're seeing people is certainly that we have people who are trying to harm us, absolutely, trying to harm us. We have to do something right then often to protect ourselves, to get out of the way of that. Then from distance, like I can look back now, I mean, it's a real, this huge enemy. I can look back now and see all the different dimensions of that person, right? In that moment, I need to get out of the way. I need to protect myself. I mean, I took self-defense for 4 years for a good reason, you know. So it's kind of like that. I wanted... kind of in line with that, I wanted to ask you all to think about what brought you to the center initially. What was it that brought you to the Kadampa Center? I don't know if anybody wants to share their coming out story. Anybody? You don't have to get... Yeah, go ahead. Let's get you a mic.
So my son actually brought me here because he needed a religious award, and this was the most comfortable thing I felt from all of my experiences. But it ended up being something that was really meaningful to me,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully to him one day when he's grown up.
Does he have his award now?
He did earn his award. It took 6 months.
Wow.
But
oh, okay.
It's a Cub Scout Meta Award, but we had to do it through Facebook with Buddhist Churches of America, which is a little different than this, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of things that are similar. And
mm-hmm. Okay.
It was, and the children's program here is wonderful. So.
Right, right. Anybody else? Yeah.
My first thought when you say what brought me to the center is when I accidentally parked in a handicapped spot one time and a lady yelled at me.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I thought of was, do I look normal to you? So, I mean, there's a lot of needs here. My initial was because I had been raised Catholic Christian and I could never really accept the whole one time and out and ascending into a heaven and
mm-hmm.
but I actually it's more for me it's more the University of Virginia, there's a whole department on reincarnation that validates reincarnations, and I absolutely saw the scientific basis for that mm-hmm. and the proof source basis of it. So that was the initial thing that got mm-hmm. me interested. And then when I got here I realized that was like a little minute part of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The rest was all then the path
mm-hmm.
that's built upon that. So the initial thing for me was the whole concept of finding a belief that,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it was based on the reincarnation, but the thing that kept me coming back was
mm-hmm.
all the other stuff, all the path and
mm-hmm.
and the studies
okay.
that go into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, well, for me, it was kind of a continuation of the thing that I started, because
mm-hmm.
I was living in Atlanta before coming to Raleigh, and I was attending a Buddhist center over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, I'm going to another place.
Uh-huh.
And I asked the director of the center in Atlanta, I'm going to Raleigh, do you know another Buddhist center in Raleigh, no?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he told me, yes, I have a friend there, he's Don Brown.
Oh, uh-huh.
And you could find Kadampa
mm-hmm.
Center, no new Kadampa, he told me.
Right.
Be careful,
right.
I don't know, but say, go yeah. to Kadampa Center, that's right.
Okay. So one time I did this, I asked the same question in a little Dharma group I'd started in New Orleans, and there were probably just like 10 people, and Geshe would come there occasionally and teach. And, you know, these were people who I didn't know knew each other, but everybody's story tied into somebody else's story. Like, well, oh, so-and-so told me about it. Well, his cousin told me about it. It was this really interesting mix. And other times I've done it, and people here some of this may be true for some of you who are not speaking up, is that it's usually because of some problem. It's usually because something happened, and I, you know, this was very painful, and I was looking for something. Which is, again, the benefit of some of those downsides of the 8 worldly dharmas. You know, they usually result in some growth towards something, whereas the praise and the gain and the stuff, it can. It certainly can. Those good things certainly can result in something positive, but it's usually a mix. And so training our minds to see them as they're arising, then we can see them when they're bigger. You know, we can catch them quicker. Any more what? Okay. Did anybody else have anything they wanted to say? I mean, for me, did you?
Sure. So I came here a few years ago for a little while, and then I guess I lost interest, or I got too busy, or
right.
And And I've been in recovery with the 12-step program for 18 years. And I had a real problem with the whole God thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 8 months, I discovered Refuge Recovery, which is a Buddhist-based mm-hmm. approach to freedom from addiction. And it's been working so well for me that applying the Dharma can free you from addiction that we have a little group that comes here every Sunday at 9 for meditation, and it just kind of brought me back, and now I come as much as I can.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. That's great. I've heard a lot of stories like that, and I mean, I'll share my own, which is, but again, it's usually something is causing some rubbing, something is happening inside of us, and we're looking for some solution with that. You know, I imagine that's also why you came here for your son, but then it started speaking to something that was chafing inside of you, right? And for me, years ago, I was in my 30s, and you know, when I was a teenager, I survived some very awful events, and so I have a bit of PTSD from them. So one night I was having a very hard time with all these kind of flashback things, and I thought, you know, luckily I had just read this autobiography of Gandhi, and so I started thinking about that in the middle of this difficult night, and I thought, you know, there's nothing that can guarantee that I won't die a violent death. Nothing. I want that guarantee. There's nothing. Even though I've taken martial arts, I could stock my whole house up and lock it and have guns. Nothing would guarantee that I won't die a violent death. But Gandhi, his whole goal was to be able to say the Hindu word for God at the moment of his death. And he was murdered, and he achieved that goal. Somebody shot him, and he fell down and said the Hindu word for God and died. And I remembered that at this difficult moment I was having, and I thought, you know, okay, he was a human being. This is not like some Superman. I mean, he is a Superman, but this is a human being who would accomplish this. And why did he accomplish this? Because he practiced it over and over and over again, so that when the moment was arising, he was able to do this. He was able to separate the person from the problem, which is also the foundation of mediation, to separate the person from the problem and attack the problem, not the person. You may have to really attack the problem. This person's trying to kill me. I need to move out of the way. But you don't have to get tied up in that person as much. So I thought, okay, this human being accomplished this. That's what I need. I need to know that I could die with a peaceful mind, because that's what I can work on. I don't have control over all these things. So the next day I went to the library, and I didn't grow up in any religion. So I was like a blank slate, and just like, I'll walk down the religious section, see what calls out to me. I'm walking there like, well, I don't have any clue. And all of a sudden I saw this book, Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And I thought, well, that's the dying thing is what I am struggling with. So let me read that book. And it rocked my world. It just changed everything. And it also gave me a lot more confidence. And we were talking about the difference between pride and confidence. Gave me confidence that there were things that I could do to create this kind of mind state that would free me from the worries that I had, the anxiety that I had, and then I was hooked, and I started trying to find a place and found the Kadapa Center basement. So it's like that. So there's like 10 different things I want to say, but I think we're going to watch this video. But is there anything else about the test? Everybody got the list of 8 worldly dharmas? Okay. So, and just remembering with the 8 worldly dharmas that to go back and look at all of them and then get some perspective, so you're looking at them from a distance from sometimes that you experience them, and look at the positive ones could actually be the ones that are a little more tricky. You know, we know the downsides, we know the problems with the downsides and how they could disturb our mind. But actually, it's developing that state of mind of like, okay, this person is praising me, because Aaron, you had asked that about that in the beginning. And, you know, knowing that this is coming from their good side, they have the goodness to see you in that light that they're praising you. How fantastic. But again, separating the praise from everything, not getting too caught into it. All right, so what I have here to show you is, remember last week I talked about phantom limb syndrome and this mirror therapy? So this is what this is about, and at first it might be like, why in the world is she showing this? And then we'll talk about why. But so I mentioned this to Geshe-la. He was fascinated. He wanted me to send him the link so that he could watch it. And when we talked about kind of the Dharma analogy, he totally blew his mind. So it's only like 5 minutes.
Where's the volume?
Brian Wagner's one of the 900.
Okay.
Brian Wagner is one of the 900 amputee patients from the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Most injuries can be treated quickly, but there are some haunting side effects. Wagner was injured by an IED while serving in Iraq. He lost part of his right leg, but the pains linger.
I feel like I'm getting stabbed like in between my toes, like with like a knife, like a poker, or in the arch of my foot, or the heel, the more like annoying ones, like when your big toes cross over your second toe, or like when you cut your toenails, there's like a little sharp spot, and you put a soft one on it, like pulls your toenail back, like that.
Phantom pain in general will dissipate over several month period, but in some people it actually lasts for years, decades.
The cause of phantom limb pain is still unknown, but there's new treatment to make this pain go away.
What we've been offering to some of the patients in our clinic here is something called mirror therapy. At the beginning of therapy, they take off their shoe and their sock, and then place the mirror between the legs, and then move the foot sort of up and down like they're stepping on the gas pedal and lifting off.
It literally feels like you're moving your foot. Like mm-hmm. it feels like your foot is there, like your reflection and just the way you move it and everything. I mean,
when the patient uses the mirror and looks into it and sees the reflective image of their intact hand or foot, they think that it is the amputated hand or foot returned. Mm-hmm. By doing the movements, you're basically either quieting down excess activity in the brain, which may be generating the phantom limb, or you may be wiping away any bad memories of that limb.
Veterans say the treatment is working. Mirror therapy is now offered routinely to lower limb amputees of Walter Reed. Dr. Zhao says it may work better than conventional pain medication for people who want to stay active.
So we're convinced that the mirror is what is actually treating the pain, and it's the visual component of this therapy that's actually modulating pain response. You have young men and women, and they were very active before their injury, and so you want to get them back to the point where they actually can do everything they did before, and hopefully even more.
Wagner says he's almost there.
After I got cut off, I was worried about that. I couldn't do all the things I used to do. But then once I started getting more active, and I've never stopped.
And Wagner says he won't stop anytime soon. From Washington, I'm Walter Morris.
Thanks, Aaron. Crazy, right? I love when he says, the doctor says this may be quieting down things that are going on in the brain. And we need tools. Just like, we can't just read this 8 verses and go, okay, got it. Even if somebody tells you, hey, the pain, you can see you have no foot. And you feel, like he said, he feels this pain between his toes. You need something else to be able to use to help relieve that pain. So I think this is a good analogy in two different ways in our practices. One is, I love that he's saying, you are using the good leg, and the doctors, I've read about this now. So the mirror's there. You can do it with your arm if you've amputated hand or arm. You're moving the good one, and the doctor's telling at the same time, go ahead and move the phantom foot, the phantom leg, even though, nobody, you don't have one, but the person is feeling it. And so the doctor says, move your good foot, move your phantom limb. And, it's otherwise, if they just said move your good foot, it's not going to really work. So there's two ways I see it that this helps us. Here we are. This is us right now, here in time. If we have some pain from our past, that is still causing us this pain, we can use ourselves with kind of, we'll talk about it now, whatever the metaphoric mirror is, to bring that painful thing forward. we can use the thing that we are now, the healthy limb, the limb that's on this path, and trying to bring the one that's in pain forward, that pain that's still getting in your way, that's still blocking you. Likewise, we can also look at the one that we want to become, the person that we want to become, ultimately enlightened, but also the person you want to be tomorrow. So you don't have to, you know, you can go all the way to enlightenment, but you can also use, tomorrow I would like to have a little more patience when I drive to work. So that when people are doing this, that on the street, I'm staying like this, this, and this in my mind. And so then you can use yourself here and moving your future self. You know, so when the doctor says, move your phantom limb, you're either moving your future self and using yourself today to try to bring those in line, or using your moving your past self and bringing that one forward. Does that make sense? And that's some of what we do in Tonglen. So we're going to do a more extended version of Tonglen in a minute, but that's exactly what we're doing. Or when we sit there and try to, you know, so say you're Greg Louganis, who's a, you know, an Olympic diver. He used to spend quite a few minutes before each dive visualizing exactly what he was doing at every twist and turn. He could feel himself on the diving board. He could walk himself all the way through it. There have been countless people who have studied athletes who do use visualization to see its effectiveness. That's, he's doing the exact same thing. So you can do that with what you want to start achieving in your life with this practice, I would suggest, but in anything. So pick something that you can really look at, whether it's increasing your patience or how you handle a specific situation. That's exactly what the eight verses are for, using that first verse, that second verse, and saying it and then meditating on who you want to be tomorrow, how you want to handle this situation, this positive situation, this negative situation, and see if you can use that just like he used the mirror. That's why when you study the Tantra model, all those visualizations are for a reason. It's the exact same thing as mirror therapy. It's the exact same thing. You are now visualizing yourself in this highly evolved state. It's not that you're visualizing somebody else. It's you that has become that, right? Okay. All right, so I'm going to, before we move into Tonglen, are there any questions? I wish this, a couple of people had questions last week and they're not here, and I was all prepared to answer those questions now. Does anybody have any other questions about Tonglen? Okay, well, I'm going to answer this question in case you're on the TV watching this at home. Somebody had asked, and I think this is a natural question that comes up, is if I'm doing Tonglen, which is basically exchanging yourself for others, it's this visualization we'll do in a minute, is that going to be harmful for yourself? You know, you're inhaling all the problems of this other person. Of course, we start with ourselves. Isn't this going to cause a problem? Is there any chance that I'm going to actually take that on and become sick? Because of the power of meditation and visualization that we've just been talking about. So, you know, the thing, as I mentioned last week, the thing that you're trying to destroy is that selfishness that's getting in the way, or the other, any other obstacles that are getting in the way of you and complete compassionate state of mind. That's what you're trying to destroy. But I love the way this is said in this book. So again, they're addressing this question. You may have the question, if I take the sufferings and pain of others, won't I risk harming myself? First of all, if you have any hesitation, then don't do it. Just say prayers. You don't do it. As you say the prayers and even imagine Tonglen, something may shift and you might feel more compelled to do it. But don't do it until you feel like, okay, I want to try this. The one thing you should know for certain is that the only thing that Tonglen could harm is the one thing that has been harming you the most, your own ego, your self-grasping, self-cherishing, selfish mind, which is at the root of your suffering. For if you practice Tonglen as often as possible, this self-grasping mind will get weaker and weaker, and your true nature, your true compassion, will be given a chance to emerge more and more strongly. So that's what you are trying to destroy. And you also start Tonglen with really just starting with this place of opening your heart before you even start doing the breathing. So are you all ready? So we're going to try this a little bit, okay? We're going to the movies now. Get your popcorn ready. Adjust your seats. Dim the lights. Get the mirror out. All right, so this is kind of a preliminary practice where we're just going to be generating compassion. And the best way to start, you know, refresh your intention, refresh your reason for why you're doing any of this, you know, that you can do on your own. By now you should have a lot of practice at setting your intention. So you just take a minute to set that, reset that. And taking some deep breaths, trying to let the thoughts go, bringing your mind home, letting your thoughts settle, neither inviting them in nor following them. You can close your eyes if you wish, but you're trying to center yourself, alert yourself slightly. And whatever understanding you have of emptiness, bring to mind. You're trying to rest in the true nature of your mind that sees all things as dependently arising, dreamlike, know how moods and atmospheres of our mind have a great hold on us. So as you sit here, try to feel the mood and atmosphere of your mind at this moment. If you feel your mood is uneasy, restless, or your atmosphere is dark, then as you breathe in, mentally absorb whatever is unwholesome and breathe out mentally, giving out calm, clarity, and joy, and healing your own environment of your mind. Just settling your mind with each inhalation, exhalation, into a more settled state. And again, even before we move to the main practice, we're just going to think of ourselves as two aspects, A and B. A is the aspect of yourself that is whole, compassionate, warm, loving, like a true friend, like a true, wonderful parent to yourself, willing to be there, responsive and open to you without ever judging you, like your most loving identical twin. That's A. B is the aspect of you that's been hurt, that feels misunderstood or frustrated, angry, who might have been treated unjustly, for example, abused, suffered, wronged. Now as you breathe in, imagine that A opens your heart completely and warmly and accepts and embraces all of B's sufferings, negativity and pain and hurt. A is completely accepting, loving, nurturing, caring for all of the pain that B has experienced. And moved by this, the B aspect of yourself opens your heart and all the pain starts to melt away in this compassionate embrace. As you breathe in, imagine A sending out to B all of the healing love, warmth, trust, confidence, joy, acceptance. Feel your heart just expanding, growing beyond your expectations. Now we'll increase this to a situation that you can remember, where you acted in a way you regret, where you acted in a way you feel guilty about or badly, you have regret when you think about it. And as you breathe in, accept total responsibility for your action in that situation without in any way trying to justify your behavior, just accepting it, acknowledging what was wrong, asking for forgiveness. And as you breathe out, send reconciliation, forgiveness, and understanding to yourself. So you breathe in the blame and breathe out the undoing of harm. You breathe in responsibility, breathe out healing, forgiveness. Again, just trying to center in the acceptance and the love, not wandering off with the story, just staying centered in the healing. Now we'll move into the main Tonglen practice of giving and receiving, where we take on through compassion the other's suffering, and we give them through love our happiness. And again, if you don't want to do this, then just listen in. So again, bring your mind home, let it settle. Bring your mind to compassion, this compassionate heart that you have. Feel yourself surrounded by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and enlightened beings, so that through their inspiration and blessing, compassion may grow stronger in your heart. You're not alone. So imagine in front of you, as vividly and poignantly as possible, someone you care for who is suffering. Just pick one person. Try and imagine every aspect of the person's pain and distress. This could be someone you know or someone you don't know. But imagine their pain. As you feel your heart opening in compassion toward the person, imagine that all of his or her sufferings manifest together and gather into a great mass of hot, black, grimy smoke. As you breathe in, visualize this mass of black smoke dissolves with your in-breath into the very core of your selfish grasping at your heart. It destroys completely all traces of selfishness, thereby purifying your negative karma. Imagine now that your self-cherishing has been destroyed that your the heart of your enlightened mind, your bodhicitta, is fully revealed. And as you breathe out, imagine you are sending out its brilliant, cooling light of peace, of joy, of happiness, of ultimate well-being to the person in front of you in pain. And that its rays are purifying all their negative karma. As Shanti Davis says, your bodhicitta has transformed your heart and your whole body and being itself into a dazzling, wish-fulfilling jewel, a jewel that can grant the desires and wishes of anyone and provide exactly what they need. True compassion is the wish-fulfilling jewel because it has the power to give precisely to each being whatever they need most and alleviate their suffering. So at the moment the light of your bodhicitta streams out to touch the person in front of you, it's essential to feel a firm conviction that all of their negative karma has been purified and a deep lasting joy that he or she has been totally freed of suffering and pain. So just continue to do this exchange, this breathing. The stronger and greater your compassion, the stronger and greater your fearlessness and confidence. Compassion reveals itself again as your greatest resource and your greatest protection. As Shanti Davis says, whoever wishes to quickly afford protection to both themselves and others should practice the holy secret, the exchanging of self for others. This holy secret of the practice of Tonglen is one that the mystic masters and saints of every tradition know, and living it and embodying it with the abandon and fervor of true wisdom and true compassion is what fills their lives with joy. try to end your Tonglen with feeling in that heart of bodhicitta that results from this practice in both yourself and the person you've been practicing with. This pure, crystal, clear joy. And as you're ready, just slowly open your eyes. How did that feel? Just encourage you to keep practicing it. Yeah.
Thank you for the gift.
Oh.
In practicing Tonglen, it's always been pretty comfortable for me to take in your pain, your mistake,
mm-hmm.
and skip the first part of that whole thing.
Yeah.
But because it's you, I listen to you, and I follow the steps, and it's...
Oh, good.
It's a good path for healing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so
and
essential.
Self-care.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, well, you're welcome. It's so important to start with ourselves. You know, it's so easy to skip over that. But we have to heal this limb in order to bring that phantom pain into healing, in order to move us towards where we want to go. You know, and that's what brought all of us in one way or another here, was to heal something and to move forward. And sometimes it's tempting, like you're saying, to skip over and let you see that so clearly, this other person's suffering. But Geshe-la says over and over again that, you know, the most important part is to start with ourselves. And that, for so many of us, that's the thing that we leave out of the equation. You know, even when we're saying like the four immeasurables or any prayer about my all beings, we are being. We have to include ourselves. Any other thoughts or questions or comments about how that went? Yeah.
Well, the thought is in the sense that if you are aware or not of the ignorance, mm-hmm. which is producing the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You're not aware of that, and you're taking that, you're going to be worse. If you're aware of the suffering is a mistake, is an ignorance, is when you could take everything, because you know that is an ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the way to take everything, knowing that this suffering is coming from ignorance. You're not knowing that, I think it's going to increase the suffering that you have. No?
Well, no, you know, that's why we first start with emptiness, start meditating on emptiness. It's not exactly how it appears, you know, but we want it to destroy our sense of selfishness. You know, if we take on that suffering with that kind of mind state, understanding that it's not exactly how it appears, right? Taking it on in this form, and what do we want it to do? We want it to destroy the things that are holding us back from perfect understanding, from perfect compassion. And it's that self-grasping mind, me first, me first. We're destroying that. And so, like, when we imagine, you know, like, so I have this little 8-year-old friend, and when he's upset about something, I have such incredible compassion for him because he's 8, you know. He's 8. I can see, like you're saying, the ignorance of it or the fleeting moment of it. Or I have such understanding of what he's going through. So like when I hug him, it's just with that complete accepting pureness of my heart. I don't have any hidden agendas. Everybody has some experience of that. That's what we also have to do for ourselves. You know, we have to look at this ourself that has suffered and embrace it with that kind of just, and that's what we're trying to do in Tonglen. We're just trying to like, oh, you know, taking in that that and breaking through our selfishness. Then it will reduce our grasping, our own ignorance. It's we get hung up with this literal thing that we're taking it on. It wasn't until this is just an aside. This is not like I'm going off track here. So don't quote me. But okay, so like I said, I was not raised in any church, but I had just heard stories, and I listened to Jesus Christ Superstar when I was in high school. So I knew, actually I grew up in New Orleans, which is a very Catholic town, so I knew all the names of things that some of my Catholic friends didn't even know what the Garden of Gethsemane was. Well, there's a whole song on Jesus Christ Superstar about the Garden of Gethsemane. So I knew these words, I knew some of the story. I couldn't really figure out, you know, I couldn't figure out some of the theology of it. When I studied Tonglen, I got it. I was like, oh, that's what they mean when they say Jesus died for your sins, and that you, because I couldn't understand like how this was going to help anybody, and I just couldn't fit it together. But when I understood Tonglen, I was like, oh, that's how. That's what that's about. It's that wish. So, you know, like when Geshe-la sometimes, you know, again, he was in my house for a long time, so sometimes he'd have a really bad headache, and I'd be trying to give him medicine. He'd say, no, I need this for a little longer because I'm practicing. He's like doing some Tonglen, or he was like, just that wish that, like, may my headache be the very last headache on earth. Having that wish is what's gold, you know? It's not whether it's going to really result in everybody's no longer having this headache. But I used to collect stories that I would read in the news. Like, there was a story of this man in Africa, this doctor who was from this one country where they're having this terrible plague. This is way before Ebola. And he was working with all these people from the goodness of his heart and his profession, just trying to help all these people, and then he contracted it. And so here he was very ill, and he was telling his wife and children not to touch him because he knew he was contagious. And as he was dying, he was making this strong wish that he'd be the very last person who suffered from this illness. And he actually was, which just, it was just a phenomenal story. So, like that, collect stories that inspire you. Because, you know, this is a hard place we're in. We need all the inspiration we can get. We need all the stories we can get to conjoin with our own practice. And this is what the great masters do in between their meditation sessions. If you look at what they're in retreat, in between their sessions, they're reading the lives of people who inspire them. We have to find things and ways, because it's all practice. Use everything. This is my favorite thing that I found, again, when I was collecting stories. This young woman grew up in a very difficult home with parents who were heroin addicts, and she was homeless half the time. And anyway, she survived all of that and ended up in Harvard. And so she's being interviewed, and I heard the interview, and the guy was asking her about her life and how she overcame these things. And she said, you just use everything when you're homeless and when you're going through all of this. And she didn't mean like material things. I mean, she did, but she said, but everything. I have to learn how to use even my anger, even my sadness. I have to use all of that. And he never followed up because he didn't know what in the world she was talking about. But it made me really think. And that's what we're talking about, is use everything. Those eight worldly dharmas, use them. Use everything to propel yourself forward. You can use every problem to help start to eradicate them. So that's my pitch. The what I just read is from the other Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Tonglen section. A modified version of it, but yeah. I like how they have this extended preliminary Tonglen. So yeah, you can get that in there. Pema Chodron has a lot on Tonglen, especially about how to destroy the things that are holding us back. Looks like everybody's pretty beat. Am I right? Am I picking up the room? Am I reading the room? No, Aaron's not.
Well, I think I
know we said nine, but...
Yeah, no, we don't need to go to nine, but I think this kind of practice is like, it's not draining, you know?
Right, right. No, the talking is draining. The talking and the listening is draining, yeah.
I found this practice. Mm-hmm. That I did listen to Pema Chodron mm-hmm. once, and I did Tong Lin, but something about the way we did it here resonated with me. Maybe it's because okay. I have been meditating for a few months,
mm-hmm.
but I hadn't before, and maybe it was too advanced for me at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I just, part of me, I mean, I could identify with the person I was thinking about
mm-hmm.
and really embracing and putting myself in her place with all the issues that she has and the problems and the history that she has of abuse.
Mm.
And I realize that when she hurts me, it's unintentional.
Mm-hmm.
She's just looking to hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she's been hurt so badly.
Yeah.
And the power in this practice for me was the power of forgiveness and the power of understanding that it's not personal.
Right.
That it was something that they're doing almost unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was freeing, and I almost blissed out.
Oh, good.
So it was great. Right. I feel really wide awake right now.
Great. Right. Isn't it amazing how, I mean, we can talk about these things and we can tell ourselves certain things, but it's not until we have that experience of it, everything shifts, and it's hard to even put it into words. And it's in Tonglen and in other meditations, we're trying to get bigger than the way we usually look at it. We can tell ourselves X, Y, and Z, and this person's... So one time I'd been meditating for a while, and I decided to turn my attention on my grandmother, who always treated me pretty bad as a kid, you know. She didn't live long when I was an adult. So I just all of a sudden asked myself, because again, I was in that huge expansive place, and I put all my attention on my grandmother, kind of brought her in front of me, and just instantly asked, you know, why? You know, why did she treat me like... And instantly I had this answer that she was jealous. And everything changed from there. And it was because I wasn't in that smaller place of feeling very personally, you know, attacked or whatever. I was in this bigger place. And the answer came, the forgiveness came. And if somebody had told me that, it wouldn't have had the same impact. Somebody said, oh, she was jealous of you. I would have thought, So it just speaks to the power of kind of getting outside of that immediate chatty mind. You know? And when I used to, most of you have heard me talk that I, you know, work in custody mediation. I don't do as many mediations as much now that I manage the program. But a lot of times I would practice this in the middle of a heated mediation where there's not much I can do and they're just kind of arguing and stuck on a certain issue. And I would just practice Tonglen so that I wouldn't get super engaged in what they were going through and keep my center and keep my compassion going. Because it's so easy to get frustrated. You can do it anywhere, anytime, but just try to spend some time when you're on the cushion starting again with yourself. Yeah.
So when we study bodhicitta and we have the seven steps and the eight and the combined, or
yeah,
whatever the numbers are, 11's the combined, right?
Yeah.
Unless you put equanimity. Anyway, it kind of
right.
depends a little bit. But
right.
So this is... The eight verses are kind mm-hmm. of similar frame of mind that we're getting in. Do you just use each of these? Are you? Is this? It's said to be mind training.
Mm-hmm. How would you use it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I guess I'm just kind of getting confused because I think I'm overthinking it. But mm. so. We have these steps to develop the mind of bodhicitta. These steps are developing the mind, same mind. I mean, same end goal, or is it slightly different, or do they work together, or is that kind of laid out anywhere?
Yeah,
I think I'm like overthinking it.
I don't know that you're overthinking. It's just like all roads lead to bodhicitta, all roads lead to emptiness. It's a really good question. There are really, really long teachings on this by His Holiness that you can see on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get you the exact right answer, so I want to ask Geshe-la. I think, you know, the meditations that you're thinking about, I think they're almost, I wouldn't say easier, but you sit and you kind of go from one stage to the next and that. These are really like how to be in the world, like taking one and meditating on that all day long. Moving from these the mind training, I mean, it's all mind training. Everything is mind training. I just see these in a different way than what you're talking about. You know, some of those bodhicitta meditations, I sit there and go through each one in a way that feels different than these, and I can't explain exactly how. I think I told you I had a friend who would write these on cards and put at least the first three in her car, switch between them each day, and try to use them in her life each day, you know. And then, you know, there's a lot in each of these, you know, just like with everything in Buddhism. There was something I was going to say about, let's lead to, a lot of the training of the mind, it all goes into like, what's the benefit? If you can train your mind to think about what's the benefit of the way that I'm thinking now. So I was telling Geshe-la on the phone last night, like I was looking through some stuff to prepare. I was going through all these countless notes I have from eons, and I told him I got kind of down on myself because so many things that I haven't done, so many notes I've taken, so many meditations I haven't even tried yet. And first he didn't know what that meant, getting down on myself. So I explained that. And he said, okay, what's the benefit of that thinking? I said, like, zero. There's like zero benefit. But as I was telling him there's zero benefit, I thought, oh, I know what could be the benefit is if I change this into encouraging myself. So it's training your mind constantly, and these are tools to train your mind in these situations. Okay, I'm going out into the world, so wherever I go, with whomever I go, I see myself as less than all others, right? You're trying to incorporate those in everything that you're doing. If you can train your mind to ask yourself, what's the benefit of this thinking? That's huge. And that's what all, it's exactly what it is. It's training the mind. And if we, like I said before, you know, our mind is like this river. And the whole point of these, all of these practices, is to keep that river as healthy and as calm as possible so that the river itself and all the beings around the river are benefiting. And half the time we're not doing any of that, and so the river's polluted or it's raging or it's, you know, dried up. And everything, including the river, is affected by that. So these are all tools to keep that river as calm as possible. But it's just tricky. The mind is a slippery thing, you know? And we're the only ones who can figure out, how am I misusing this? What do I need to do now to adjust it? So I'm maxed out. I think it's time. Yeah. Good. Let somebody else talk.
I was thinking about it earlier, and it seemed like a good place to mention it, but with the eight verses, mm-hmm. it seems really important, and it's helped make it easier for me is not so much focusing on each verse, but actually looking at thoughts as they arise. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. before, like if you can see a thought arising and grasp it, analyze it, but don't. I think we have a tendency of acting out. Like you'll anger or frustration. If you can catch it, like a lot of times you don't even think about, oh, there's that thought. It just arose. Don't act on it. Don't even in your mind out. You know, outwardly or inwardly, let that affect and kind of process it, I guess.
Right.
And then these are great tips on, well, you know, don't. If once you grasp it, kind of turn it around and use it to benefit, not to hurt
right.
other people. So
right, exactly. There's lots of options pick the better option. But yeah, that's why I think in meditation we are watching with our, we are watching, oh, I see a thought coming up. Okay, now I can just let it go. I mean, we're practicing that so that then when we're off the cushion, we can also see like, and you know, yeah, usually we've already followed that thought way down the road. Sometimes I find myself going, how did I start thinking about this? I can trace it back sometimes, so like, oh my God, it started way over here with this cup, and then I started thinking about all that. So yeah, practicing on the cushion then helps us out there to catch those thoughts before we believe them, you know. Just remember I told you about the empty canoe, like if the canoe, you know, or there's a car, say, that's coming, cutting across the highway, and you have all these ideas about this, and this whole story about this lunatic person, and look at that bumper sticker on their car, and you know, and then you see there's nobody in the car. And it's just, all that story's gone, and you're just trying to protect yourself from hitting that car. So I've been using that one on the road these days, but we can use it in anything in our lives. It's that same thing, catching that story, just doing what you have to do to get out of the way and not get harmed. Okay, guys, you all have been great. I have to make, I'm making this pitch, like, just like Donna was talking, I don't really need to make this pitch to you all because it really should be the people who are not here that I'm making the pitch to. So anybody watching, I remember some teachers saying, you know, Jeffrey Hopkins, who has translated so many books into English, has said he realized that if he wants to read Tibetan Buddhism in the future, he needs to translate it in this life so that he can find it in the next life. So I remember at one point I felt that very strongly, like if I want to find how amazing it is that I found this in this life. How amazing it is that I'm out here, that I survived, that I found this path, that there's a center in here, that, you know, that I know Geshe-la, all these things, how amazing it is. So I need to preserve it. That's why this is called the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. So many, many, many of you have done so much to help preserve it. This is also a pitch to anybody who would consider donating to the center to help. And I remember when I first came to the center in the basement, there was a picture of His Holiness in a little bowl with like some fruit and some dollar bills on there. And I thought, I really don't understand why, like, why is somebody putting a dollar bill? He's not going to be able to reach out from that photograph and take it. And then somebody explained to me, no, but you know, you are creating a connection to Him. Your action, you know, that action of giving to even a photograph of Him creates some connection. It's a karmic connection that it's like, oh, finally kind of sunk in. So that's the same thing. It's the intention behind the act. It's not, as Mother Teresa says, it's not how much you give, it's how much you put into the giving. So that's my fundraising pitch. The other thing I would say is if you do write out a check for the center, put Discovering Buddhism on the bottom, so because I get points. I'm going to go to Hawaii if I get enough points.
You're already there.
I'm already there, right? I'm just kidding. But at least I can say I did my pitch.
Hey, they can do it on the text. Oh,
right.
Text giving.
Right. Right. So. Anyway, thank you all for your incredible energy, and it's never easy for an introvert like me to sit up here, but you all make it a lot easier. So I always end up like, oh, I'm really glad that I ended up doing this, you know. So this is this interdependence thing, because I would not be able to sit up here if it wasn't for you all sitting there, and many other things. So I'm so excited that we do have this interconnected thing. We've walked around the stoop a couple times together and all that. So we're going to dedicate all this incredible merit that you all have created. You came here early. You took a test on a Monday night. You did all these things. You did all this meditation. And what page is Shanti Deva's prayer?
246.
Okay. Oh, come on, I don't have one.
You don't have a prayer book?
No. Oh, thank you. So first of all, think about how, you know, everything we do creates karmic seeds, walking, talking, neutral seeds, positive seeds, negative seeds. What you have done tonight has created just masses of positive karmic seeds. And so now you are dedicating for how they're going to ripen. And this prayer helps us. This prayer is like a little train we're putting these seeds of merit on. And also with the intention that, you know, that you will be able to develop complete bodhicitta, complete understanding of emptiness so that you can, that you as a being benefit and all those around you benefit as well. Okay? May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing and the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be tiny harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. All right, good night. Thank you all.